It's the May 1st. Hey, folks, now, you're all going to have a great Star Wars Day on Sunday, right? You know, Star Wars Day is on Sunday. May the 4th. May the 4th be with you. Yeah, I got another lame joke to go with that. We're continuing options. But look, folks, look. All of our stocks, and this was down 50% on Tuesday, so obviously they had a little bit of bump up. But all of our stocks are in the green, in the black, it's usually called. And one of them has brought us down, so maybe we might break even by the end of the semester. Maybe. But hey, could have been worse. Could have been a whole lot worse. We could have picked all very risky, volatile stocks and been down 40%. Good thing it's not real money, huh? Okay, yes, let's turn those off. Turn those off. Okay, so did you hear this is you know, really a serious accident happened. This guy's whole left side of his body was cut off. They got him to the hospital. He's all right now. His whole left side of his body was cut off. They got him to the hospital. They saved him. He's all right now. He's all right. He's all right. See, it's the end of the semester. They start getting really, really lame. All right. What? Half the class. I don't know, because at the end of the semester, people just stop showing up. It's sad. All right. So we have this embarked upon options. Now, I'm going to give you an option. No pun intended. Do you want to start from the beginning?
Yeah. Sure.
I think it's a good idea, because options are tricky, folks. And I try my best to keep you from ever using them. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to try my best. Who wasn't here on Tuesday? Did you get one of these? Did you get one, though? You got one.
Oh, no, I never got it.
You never got it? Okay. And you need to understand them, even though you're not going to trade them, right? You're not going to speculate them. Nod your head yes. Maybe you will. Maybe if you like Vegas, if you're that kind of person. So let's skip the joke here and just keep on going. Stock options, or options contract as they're called, are securities, which means they are financial tradable items, securities. That's the name for a security. That allows us to buy. We have the option. We don't have to exercise that option. An underlying asset. And there are options on many different assets, but we're going to deal with stocks. Options contracts are not investments, folks. They are contracts. They are agreements between two individuals, the buyer of the option and the seller of the option. Usually when people talk about options, they're talking about it from the viewpoint of the buyer. But for every buyer, there is a seller of the option. So we should think about the seller also. The buyer of the option gets the right to buy or sell, and that's what makes it even more confusing, because there's options to buy, call options, and there's options to sell, put options. And the seller of the option gets the option premium, it's called, the price of the option, but has to abide by the contract. In that, if the buyer of a call option wants to exercise the option and buy the stock, the seller must do it. And if the buyer of a put option wants to exercise the option and sell the stock, the buyer must take the other side of the transaction at the exercise price. And we call options derivatives, but they are just one type of derivative. Today we probably will not get to futures, but Tuesday we will, I promise, and we will see another type of derivative called futures. But options are just one type of derivatives. They derive their value from something else. They have no voting rights, they receive no dividends, no interest, and eventually they disappear. Their value comes from the fact that they allow the holder of the option to participate in the price behavior of the underlying asset with a much lower capital outlay. We can make a lot of money, we can lose it all. Options allow an investor to leverage their outlay of capital. There's that word again, the ability to obtain a given equity position at a reduced capital investment, thereby magnifying returns. We will see leverage again when we get to margining, and then again when we get to real estate. With options, you can make the same amount of money from a stock or a security as if you bought it for full price, but only come up with 1/10 or 1/20 of the price. Does that sound too good to be true? No, it doesn't. It is. In my humble opinion, it is, folks. Often you simply lose all your money. So that's the rationale. Instead of buying a stock, let's buy an option to buy a stock. Or an option to sell a stock. If I could draw a mirror, I would draw a mirror right here. Because they're basically mirror images of each other. If the stock goes up, your option will go up almost always much, much faster. And you can sell the option for a handsome price. You don't have to exercise the option. You can simply pass it on to some other group. I mean, some other option trader, speculator. There is only one catch. Boom. The option expires. And most options expire worthless. Now, I told you you're going to hear two different sides of the story. You're going to say 90. You're going to hear people say 90% of options expire worthless. And you're going to hear only 10% of options expire worthless. Both numbers are absolutely wrong. It's somewhere in between. It's about 50, 60%. There are some scenarios where options can be worthwhile, but they are few and far between. So let's go back and take a look at... Am I going too fast? Am I going the right speed? Okay. Let's go back and take a look at the example that we looked at. We have a stock selling for $20. And you're really excited about this stock. So you buy one share. Let's keep it easy. You buy one share. And the stock goes up to $30. You will have made $10 on a $20 investment, which is a 50% return on your money. Not bad, right? Okay, well, what if you say, you know what, instead of buying the stock, I'm going to buy the option. And currently the option is selling for the price of $1. So you buy that option for $1, and the stock goes to 30. What's going to happen to the option? It's not going to go to 30. It's going to go to about 11. It's going to mirror the price movement of the stock. So if the stock goes up 10 points, the $10, the option will go up $10. And what did you do? You made $10 on a dollar investment as opposed to $10 on a $20 investment. Here, it's a 50% return. Here, it's a 1,000% return. Nice, huh? Me some too. I want that. Well, what normally happens? Do stocks usually go up that much in a matter of 3 months, 6 months? No. What if you wish, of course, and some do. You know, sometimes they do, folks. Sometimes stocks explode on the upside. Is anybody else having problems with their ears from the weather or anything? My one ear is completely clogged, and so if you talk to me from this ear, I can barely hear you. I can't even hear. It feels weird. I can hear here. I can hear here. I can't hear anything. And everybody else is complaining. But not everybody. But other people complaining about their sinuses and their nose. Okay. So what happened at the stock? What happens if the stock stays at 20? Are you going to exercise your option? No. It doesn't make any sense. Why buy a stock selling for, say, $19 at 20 when you can buy it at 19? So what's going to happen is your option is going to expire worthless. And as soon as that happens, this is the way the world works, as soon as that happens, what happens to the price of the stock? Yippee! But because you bought the option that expired, you were absolutely right about the stock, but you lost the ability to share in the success of the stock. So my advice is to forget about the option, just buy the stock. Got it? Because does the stock expire? No, unless the company goes bankrupt. Does the stock pay dividends? A lot of times, yeah, they do. Some have been paying dividends for over 100 years. Some haven't paid dividends at all, and maybe someday will. But this is an introduction to investments class. And so if only to be able to warn our friends and family members who go, ooh, somebody just told me they can make 100% in one day. You'll say to him or her, it's not a lie, it's true. You can make 100% in one day, and the next day, lose 100%. So make sure he understands or she understands that, sure, you can make, it can go from $1 to $2, and then down to $0. You're one of those millennials that doesn't have a telephone or email? You're one of those millennials that does not have a telephone or email? You do? Goodness gracious. Do you have your formula sheets? Out. Somebody give them a calculator. Oh, we got one? Okay. Take it. Take this with you. Here you go. My wife can't believe it. Other professors, why do you let them take the exam early? Why do you let them not early? They're late. Why do you let them do it? Is it because I want to learn the damn material, right? Okay.
Nice.
Not anymore. Not anymore. No more Mr. Nice Guy. So we have to learn about options, if only to be able to protect ourselves and our friends and family. There are two main types of options. Call options, which are an option to buy, and put options, which are an option to sell. That's how it works. The previous example that we saw here is an option to buy, a call option. And most people, when they talk about, did I get this right? How do we get to three? Okay. Most people, when they talk about options, they're usually talking about call options. They say, no, it's a put option. I want the stock to go down. The put option is the exact opposite. You are hoping that the stock goes down. In which case, if it were a put option, we would want the stock to go down, and then our option would go up. It would mirror, but on the way down. So we then took a look, okay, where did the terms call and put come from? How will I remember which is which? Well, we've heard the term call already when we called the bonds away. Remember, same idea? And we saw the people in the previous technology, before everybody was sitting in front of computers, when they would yell at each other, I'll buy, call, I'm calling, or I'll put, I'll sell. They use that maneuver. So the term call comes from the idea that when you buy a call option, you get the right to call the stock away from the seller. And the put gives you the idea that when you put an option, you get the right to put the stock to the seller. Get the idea? Okay, let's take a look at each one in detail. And the two parties of a call option. Remember, there is always two parties. There are always two parties. There is a seller and a buyer. And to make matters worse, the seller also is called the writer and the maker. So those names, you'll hear people say that too. Most of the time they'll use the word sell, but you'll also hear them use the word option writer, option maker. The option buyer is the person who has the right to buy the stock, to call it away from the seller. The option seller is the person who's on the hook to sell the stock if the option is exercised. If the option is not exercised, the seller is not required to do anything. Yes?
What's the difference between writer and underwriter?
Well, underwriter is used in the world of stocks when we have a new IPO, an initial public offering. The underwriter is often an investment bank such as Merrill Lynch or Goldman Sachs. And then underwriter is also used in the world of insurance for the individual or the company who's actually backstopping the insurance, saying, okay, we'll take on that risk. Usually the underwriter is not the agent. The agent works for several different companies. Unless there are some agents just work for certain insurance companies, and then they turn around and they contact the underwriter and say, hey, I got somebody here who wants a life insurance policy. Here's all the details. The underwriter looks at it and goes, all right, for this amount of money, we'll take on that risk. But the idea of an underwriter is somebody who is putting a platform under something. In the case of the IPO, the underwriter says, if you don't, there's a few different provisions. And this is that in the book in chapter 5, they go into very much detail about underwriting and the IPO process. And if you take the Series 7, that's one thing I leave out of this class. If you take the Series 7, you're really going to have to bone up on that. But it's stupid because most brokers just don't get involved in these things. At least that's been my experience. I have nothing to do with them. What does IPO stand for? It's probably overpriced. Or imaginary profits only, right? So I stay away from these things, and I hope you do too. But if you become a broker, you're really going to have to understand how the process works. So if you're Goldman Sachs, and you go to a new company, whatever it is, Squeegee or whatever some of the new companies are, Zynga, or what's the one? What's the Candy Crush? No, Zynga is the farmland. Anyway, the one that just came out, King or something like that? King, Candy Crush. And you're Candy Crush and you want to go public. You go to Merrill Lynch, you go to Goldman Sachs, you go to, who else? Nobody does it now. Lehman Brothers gone. Barclays. And you say, hey, we want to go public. And so they say, oh, great. They look at the business and they go, yeah, we'll underwrite it. And so they say, we're going to take you public. We're going to get paid a lot of money because we're going to take a lot of that money that you're going to get from the sale of the stock. But we guarantee that if the stock doesn't sell, we'll buy portions of it. So in that way, it's an underwriting like an insurance company. Did I answer your question? You got to be careful when you ask a professor a question. Sometimes you'll get a whole lot more answer than you really wanted to. But the writer of an option is just another name of a seller. So it's kind of the same idea. Yeah, I'll take on that risk. I'll take on the risk that the stock zooms up and I'll have to buy it at 30 and turn around and sell it to you at 20. Okay, what is the call option buyer hoping for? The call option buyer is hoping that the price of the stock will go up. He or she is bullish because if the price of the stock goes up, the option will mirror that, depending on how much time there is, and they get to buy a $30 stock for 20 bucks. The call option seller is hoping that the stock price of the stock will go down or at least stay the same, right? They are bearish or at least not bullish, neutral. If the stock stays around 20 or goes down, the call option buyer will not want to exercise the option and it will expire worthless and the call option seller gets to keep that dollar and then they can do it over again. They could turn around and sell another option. So here's the graphic that we took a look at. I gave you I put the things out, so we won't do that. But here's Ed and Ted. Ed is the call option buyer. He's bullish. He wants the price of the stock to go up. He does not have to exercise the option. If the price goes down or stays around 20, he can just say, I lost my money. I lost my dollar. Ted gets the dollar. That's in his pocket, and nobody can take it away from him. But now he's got to sit around sweating for 3 months or 6 months or however long the option expires, until the option expires. And if the price goes up, what's going to happen? Ed's going to call it away from him. He's going to say, you know, you told me you're going to sell me this stock for 20 bucks. It's now selling for 30. Damelo, give it to me. And he has to do it. Are you with me? Okay, good. The put option is exactly the same, but in reverse. And this is what makes the Series 7 question so hard. Because if you zig when you should have zagged, you get the answer wrong. And, of course, the four choices or five choices, they will have the number that would have happened if you had zigged, and they would have the result if you zagged. So you got to know which one to pick. It would be nice if they didn't have the number which went the wrong way, but no, it's on there. As one of the options, as one of the choices. So the put option buyer is the person who will sell the option, put it to the option seller, the option writer, the option maker. Again, they don't have to exercise that right. And the put option seller gets the buck. They get to keep the dollar or whatever it costs for the option, but they are on the hook to buy the stock, to take it away from the put option buyer. So the put option buyer is bearish. You would buy a put option if you thought the stock price were going to go down. The put option seller, the writer, the maker, is bullish or at least neutral, thinking that the stock's going to stay pretty much the same And as long as it does, or it goes up, they get to keep the buck. And then here's exactly the same. The put option buyer pays the dollar for the right. The put option seller gets the dollar. This guy hopes the price goes down, in which case he can sell a stock at 20 that's gone down to 16. Or what often happens is he just turns around and sells the option before the expiration date, and then somebody else gets that right. And then the put option seller gets the dollar, but now until the option expires, he has to buy it away from him at that strike price, at that exercise price, until the option expires. And after that, he's not on the hook for anything else. Options are confusing, aren't they? Yes, they are. They're one of the hardest parts of the Series 7 stockbroker exam. They sound like gambling, right? They are. There is zero-sum game. Somebody loses, somebody wins, and you still got to pay commission. So the brokers always wins. You can't invest in options. You can speculate. You can trade in options. But you can't invest in something that has a 50, 60% chance of being worthless in 3 months. Any investing. So now let's take a look at the option attributes. And you really, I want you to learn these. You're going to be on the test. But more important, at least you'll know what the hell you're talking about. We've already discussed the strike price, the exercise price. That's the price in which you have set in the contract. In the contract, it's set. $20, doesn't change. And the price of the stock goes up and down, the price of the option goes up and down, but the stock price does not change. Pricing is much more flexible now. We saw that they were selling in $1.50 increments on Tuesday. The expiration date is the day that the option expires. And some options can only be exercised on that date. Those are called European options. Did I say that already? Oh, it's on the next slide. I'm sorry. American options can be exercised anytime. You don't have to wait until the last day. Yeah, there it is. American options can be exercised at any time. European can be exercised expiration. The one I thought was kind of cool, and I can't remember exactly what it was about. It was kind of strange. Jamaican options. Jamaican, I guess too much ganja. So check that out. Okay. Okay. And then we took a look. This is where we ended. We said, so that wasn't too bad. No, we reviewed. Okay. We took a look at the options chains, they're called. The option chain, which is the list of the prices. And we saw that the farther out you go, the more the option is going to be worth because of what's called the time of premium. So this is where we got to. Somebody brought it up. Okay, USANA. Yeah, USANA was here. Okay. We've discussed options contracts, if they were traded just as stocks are traded. And in most ways, they're very similar. It's a you know, double auction, but it's all electronic now. But there's one major difference. An option is sold as a contract. You must buy, when you buy an option, you must buy or sell 100. Every contract is 100 shares. So when we saw a dollar, did you really pay a dollar?
No.
$100 plus the commission. Are you with me? So the seller would get $100 in their pocket minus the commission that they got to pay because both the buyer and the seller pay a commission. Each contract represents 100 shares of underlying security. There are no odd lots on the options exchanges. So if the listed price is $5, then it'll be $500. And then you bought two contracts, it would be 500 times two or 1,000. Make sense? Okay, so that's just one thing you have to know there. The option premium is that we've been using the term price of the option, but technically, although I always use the word price, and I either hear people use the word price, the technical term is the premium, the option premium. That's supposed to look like one, I'm sorry. My ones sometimes look like twos. The seller, the writer, receives the premium immediately and gets to keep it whether or not the option is ever exercised. Now, I mentioned that most options expire without being exercised. I mentioned that. Yeah, I did. Okay. To make it more confusing, the term premium is also used in a more precise manner when valuing options. For this reason, most of us working grunts refer to the price of the option instead of the premium of the option. But you need to know, especially if you take the Series 7, that that's called the premium. Now, in the money, out of the money. This is where it gets a little crazy. Did I? Yeah, on the back. You got your handout, right? That's on the back sheet. Yeah, the very back, the back of the front, the back of the first sheet, the back of the first sheet. Okay, and these are the kind of questions. I'm sorry, you didn't get one? Who else? What are you, bum? Didn't I just give you one? Pass that back to them. I mean, Daniel. Okay. Okay. In the money, out of the money. If you remember the options chain, let's take a real quick look at it. Let's go back to here and take a look at Johnson & Johnson. No, we don't want to. What am I? I keep. You know, it's going to take me a long time to realize that they really screwed up Yahoo. I still go to Yahoo every once in a while. I go, why did I go here? This place is stupid. They just ruined it. And now I was going to the Canadian one, and then they finally added the whatever they do to the American one to the Canadian one. So forget that. Okay. So let's go to options. Where's options, Frank? There they are. Okay. And what we saw, let's go out to July. This should have fewer ones. What we see, now I don't know if you can tell it so much on the screen here, but see, this is bad. You see this is shaded? Can you see this is a little different, shaded? And then this is a little different? That means they're in the money. In the money. If it's not shaded, and of course it's a mirror image of one another, it's out of the money. Now what the hell are we talking about? An option is in the money if the strike price is less than the market price of the underlying security for a call option. In other words, if the strike price is $20 and the stock goes up to, say, $24, you would be $4 in the money. You like that name? We're in the money. So the example here on the slide is a $50 strike price, $50 exercise price. If the market price were $54, we're $4 in the money. Now, if it's an out of the money call option, that would mean that the market price was less than the strike price. Why would you exercise an option to buy at 50 when the price of the stock is $47? Would you bother exercising that option? I mean, think about it, folks. You can buy it for 47 and you're going to go buy it for 50? So your option is out of the money. Do you like those terms? Yeah, in the money, out of the money. And if the strike price is equal to the exercise price, it's called at the money. You don't like that. Well, that's what it is. I can't help you. You got to know it for the Series 7. And so, guess what happens? It's everything in reverse for a put option. The put option is exactly the opposite. There's a call. And the put option, if the strike price is $50, an in-the-money put option is when the market price is less than the strike price. Because you can put that stock at $50 that's selling for $47. You with me? Yeah? No? If you go like this, you go like that, you go like that, you can go like that. You don't have to say anything. You don't have to say anything. And then the exact same true for it, the exact same opposite is true if this market price is greater than. If the market price were greater than the strike price, the exercise price on a put option, the option would be out of the money. Make sense, folks? Am I beating a dead horse, or do you want to take a look at an assignment? Not an assignment, a problem. Let's take a look at the first problem. Problem number one on the back page. Who will read problem number one? Yeah, right there. Look at the front page and then turn to the back page. to the page number one. Ooh, I can't talk anymore. All right, I'll read it. Okay, you think that big and oily malted balls, candy, symbol bomb, is going to be the next best thing. The stock is currently selling for $29. So what do? You purchase a call options contract with an exercise price of $30. Now, this is a call. If I buy this call option, I think the price is going to go up. I'm at least hoping it's going to go up. But I bought the call option at $30. What's the market price? $29. So is it in the money or out of the money? It's out of the money. I wouldn't bother exercising this option. The price is $29. So I am, I am $1 out of the money. Right. If it's a call option and the market price is greater than the strike price, it would have been in the money. Are you with me? At the money. Isn't that great? And you're supposed to know that, folks. And let's continue. Okay, now, what happens in theory and then in practice? Theoretically, as soon as you, if you're in a call option and you're bullish, as soon as the stock market price hits the exercise price, every dollar it goes up, you're making money as a call option buyer. But if you're the call option seller, every dollar it goes up, you're losing money. Are you with me? Yeah, you're the call option seller. You don't want to go over the strike price because now you're losing money every dollar it goes up. But what's the problem with this theoretical graph? It doesn't take into account the fact that you had to buy the option. Now, this is from your book, and I think it's a little, but it's $10. The option premium, the option price, is $10. So the call option buyer had to pay $10. So right off the bat, the call option buyer is down $10. Now it hits the strike price and starts going up. Now for every dollar that it goes up, the call option buyer is making a buck and the call option seller is losing a dollar. But it has to hit the break-even point. It has to hit, in this case, 50 plus 10, because you have to pay $10 to get there, before you break even, forgetting commissions. Are you with me? Yeah? Okay, good. Because the same thing happens with the put option. In reverse, it's a mirror image. Theoretically, once you hit the strike price and then start going down, the buyer starts making money, the seller starts losing money, but that's theoretical. If the option costs $10, the seller gets that $10 in their pocket right away. The buyer had to pay that $10. Now when it gets down to the strike price and starts losing money, the buyer starts making money until finally they hit the break-even point, and then they actually start, then they've broken even. Now they start making money. The seller doesn't start losing money until you hit the break-even point, ignoring the commissions. So let's now continue with number one. For this option, we had to pay, what, $2? It cost us, as the call option buyer, $2. So what's our break-even point? Danielle said 32, is she right? Because remember, we're going to be able to buy the shares at 30, but we had to pay $2 for that option. So the stock has to hit $32 before we actually break even.
Sounds right. That's
right. She's right. You understand why? These are the kind of questions you get on the Series 7. What's the break-even point for a call option that you purchased at $2 with a strike price of $30 and the market price is $29? Is it in the money, at the money, or out of the money? And ignoring commissions, if the stock price rose to $36, how much money would you make? What would be your profit? $4, but wait a minute, you had to 100. You have to multiply times 100. Because every option contract is 100 shares. So you'd actually make $400. Everything's multiplied by 100. You didn't just pay $2, you had to pay 200 if you bought one contract. If you bought two contracts, 400. See what's going on here? You're not happy about it. Neither am I. I don't like it myself. Okay, so let's do number two. You are sure that the price of Opie's obedient pet service, symbol is oops, is far too high. You think investors have bid up the price to an outrageous amount. About a month ago, you purchased a put option contract to sell 100 shares at 90. So you bought a put option contract. What are you hoping for? The price to go down. If you buy a put, you are bearish. So how much did you have to pay for that? The strike price is 30, but I didn't read it, I'm sorry. The price of the option was $3. Remember, multiplied times 100, so you had to pay $300. But the stock is now currently selling for 88. The stock has gone down. So answer the following questions. Is the option in the money, at the money, or out of the money? It's in the money, because it's a put option. It's gone down, so we're $2 in the money. Now, what's the break-even point? We had to pay $3 for this. 90, you went to call. Right. The break-even point is 90 minus 3. So the break-even point is $87. Are you with me? Because you had to pay $3 for that right. So it's a right to sell. It has to go down to 87 before I even break even, ignoring the commissions. And what if the stock price fell to 82? How much would I make? Right. $5 is the difference between the break-even point and what the market price is, but you have to multiply times or $500. You with me? You understand why? Where did I lose you? The break-even point, we had to pay $3 for this option. The option strike price, the exercise price is $90. And we're hoping that the price goes down. It's a put. So if the price hits 87, then we have broken even because we've made back our $3. Now as it continues to fall, now we're actually starting to make some money. What if the price went up? We lost. We lost our whole $300. If the price goes up, we don't exercise the option, we lose our $300. Yes?
So the call option, you're hoping it'll go up, and the put, you're hoping it'll go down.
You got it. Call option, we hope that the price goes up. And that's why it makes it so difficult, because they're mirror images of one another. Yeah. And I don't know if you ever tried to, but I got a beard, and you ever try to cut your beard in the mirror,
yeah.
You stab yourself with the dye. I meant to go this way. Okay, good. Okay, I think you're starting to get it. Let's continue. The time premium. The amount by which the option price exceeds the options in the money value. In general, the longer the time to expiration, the greater the size of the time premium. So in other words, what we saw on Tuesday is if it's going to expire in May, which is what, May 17th or something like that? No. 16th, May 16th? The third Friday in every month. If it's going to expire in 2 weeks, basically. Wait a minute. Am I getting this wrong? Today is May 1st.
Right.
So tomorrow will be May 2nd, then May 9th, then May 16th. Okay. So that's the third Friday. So you basically got 2 weeks before it expires. So your time premium will be very small, as we saw on Tuesday. If you extend your time out to July or September, you're going to pay a much bigger premium for a price for the option, and that's called the time premium. In other words, an option that is in the money will sell for more than it is than the amount it is in the money because of the time remaining until the expiration date. There's more chance for it to go up or down if it's a call option. Often an option that is out of the money will still have some time value. The option still has time to become worth more as the underlying stock price changes. So if we go back and take a look at this options chain, we'll see that, look, this the current price is, as of today, $100.34. But here's an option at $101. Boy, they're getting really tricky here. $101. This option is out of the money. Why would you buy a stock at $101 when it's currently selling for $134? It's out of the money. But because there's another, this is July, right? We picked July. There's another 2-3 months for this stock to go higher. So whoever is buying that option for 100 shares at $115, $1.15 times 100, is hoping that between now and July, it will go in the money and go up to $2 or $3. That's the time premium. Make sense? And if we go back to May, oh, that was May. Was that May? No. Yeah, that is May. I'm sorry. Let's go to July. Oh, there's July. July, it's, that doesn't make any sense. Something's not right. Let's take a look at June. It's $1.68. So I think that July one's not good. Here's the May. We got $1.15. And we have 2 weeks for it to go up. Here, we pay $1.68 because we have 6 weeks for it to go up. We have until June. And then, for some reason, I think that is probably old. That's probably not a good data right there. It's probably old data. Okay, great. Let's continue. And don't forget commissions, booby! In the previous examples, we did not include the cost of the commission. A commission is charged whenever an option is bought or sold. Both the buyer and the seller pay a commission, and a commission is charged when and if the buyer exercises the option and buys or sells the stock. Again, both the buyer and the seller pay a commission. You understand why your broker would love to get you hooked on options? Yeah. When you include the commissions, it makes it that much harder to make money in options because it's a zero-sum game to begin with, and then you pull away the commissions. It's not easy. It's not easy. So good luck if you do it. Speculating. You will often hear, if you feel the market price of a particular stock is going to move up, if you anticipate a drop in the price within the next 6 months, it is a highly risky, I use the word investment. These are out of the book, by the way. I took these quotes from the book. Strategy. But it may be suited for the more speculatively inclined. It's BS. The flaw in these arguments is this. There has never been a successful method to pick stock prices in the short term. You may feel or anticipate that the price will go up and down, but that doesn't mean it will. It is not investing. It is gambling. Plus, you may be correct, but your option may expire before you are proven correct. Hedging. Now, we're going to come back to this idea when we get to futures. A transaction or series of transactions made to reduce the risk of adverse price movements in an asset. You can think of hedging as a kind of insurance. Have you heard the term hedge your bets? Never heard it? We'll come back to it later. But in other words, don't, you know, do something else. You're betting everything's going to go this way. You'll think, maybe it goes that way. And although insurance can be useful in some circumstances, it ain't free. You pay for the insurance via the price of the option and the commissions. Investors can use hedging strategies when they are unsure of what the market will do, which is always. A perfect hedge reduces your risk to nothing, except for the cost of the option, the commission. So you own 100 shares of Butterfly.com. Okay? It's selling for $50. Now, you bought it for, $20 or something like this. You've made a pretty darn good profit, right? So what you can do is you can purchase a put at $50. Wait a minute. I own the shares. Why would I purchase a put? That's an option to sell. That means I think the stock price is going to go down. Well, no matter what happens, if the stock price does go down, you can sell your shares for $50. You see what you just did? You've ensured that you're not going to lose any more than $50. It's not going to go down any more than $50. So you got the stock at $50. Now if it goes down, you can sell it at $50. If it goes up, are you going to exercise the option? No, you can sell it for $53. Why would you exercise the option? This is called a protective put. You are protected against the stock price collapsing, but only till the option expires. Then you got to go out and buy another put. Insurance is not free. Using options as insurance is one sure way to keep your broker very happy. If you're sure the stock will fall, why not sell the darn thing?
Oh, no. Then I got to pay taxes.
Oh, well, you know, it's up to you. But that's what some people will say. They say, oh, I want a protective put. A straddle, the simultaneous purchase or sale of a put and a call at the same underlying financial asset. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Why would you buy a call and a put at the same time? Why would you do that? Because no matter what happens, whether the stock price goes up or whether the stock price goes down, you're going to be in the money. Unless it happens to hit at the money just when you're ready to expire, then you're really screwed. If the price is volatile in either direction, up or down, you will make money, provided you pass the break-even point for both purchases plus the commissions. If the stock price is not volatile, then you would sell, right, make the straddle, and hope that the price does not change greatly. Two commissions at the same time. Your broker's going to love you. Right. So let's take a look at an example here. Butterfly is selling for $50. I'm going to erase this guy right here. Butterfly is selling for $50, but its price is very volatile. Right? You purchase a call at $50 and a put. So you're hoping the price goes up or the price goes down. Now, are you going to be right? Yeah. Is the price going to go up or is the price going to go down?
Yeah.
Unless you're really a loser and the day that it expires at $50. In which case, the bridge is always there for you to jump off of. But you had to pay $4 for the call option and $5 for the put option. You understand? The option is not free. So now, the call option cost you $4, the put option cost you $5, the price has to go to $59 up or $41 down before you hit the break-even point. And that doesn't include the commissions. You pay two commissions for the straddle, possibly one more for exercising the option. Brilliant strategy, huh? It gets better. A spread, the simultaneous purchase and or sale of two or more options with different strike prices and or expiration dates. The stock's selling for $50, you buy a call at a strike price of $50, you sell a call at the strike price of $55, you paid for the call at $50, but you got paid for the call at $55. If the stock price goes up, you make money. Does this sound brilliant, folks? I don't think so. Now, let's take a look at problem number 3. Your broker calls you and says, you know, straddles are a great way to generate commissions. I mean, make money for me. The stock Young's Underwater Crab Hatchery, the symbol is yuck, is extremely volatile. It is currently selling for $33. So let's do this again using this option, this example. $33. So what do we want to do? We buy a call and a put option at $35. So the stock is $33 right now. That's the current market price. How much is the call option cost us? $2. And the put option cost us $5. Alright? Even though you're not quite sure whether or not this is a good idea, you go ahead with the offer from your broker. What is the following question? What is the total price of your options? $2 for the call, $5 for the put. So how much are you out? Times 100. $200 for the call, $500 for the put. How far does the stock price have to swing from $35 in either direction before your straddle is in the money when you've hit the break-even point? How much? It's got to go up.
Where does it got to go?
Has to go up to 42.7 up. Or down to 28. It has to go up $7 in either direction before you hit the break-even point.
What did you say? I have to go down to what?
20. What's 35 minus 8, 7 is 28. So it has to go up to 35 to 42, or down to 28 before you've hit the break-even point. Yes. Because you paid $2 or $200 for the call, $5 or $500 for the put, so it's got to go up $700 before you actually make any money, ignoring the fact that you had to pay commissions. Do you think this is a good idea, folks? Neither do I. I don't think so. I think it stinks. And I would never want you to do it, and I never want my clients to do it, and I would never do it. But I think this is an excellent opportunity for people who want to watch the suckers try to make money doing this. If you believe that you can hold on and you have the money to do so, you're not naked, right? Or you have the shares or have the money. Selling options allows the individual investor to play the part of the casino. You become Las Vegas casino, and the option buyer is betting against you. You're always going to get your dollar or $2 or $5. But you're on the hook in case things turn against you, right? You with me? So you better be covered. You better be prepared to lose. And if a stock price zooms up, you're going to lose big. Or if it collapses, you're going to lose big. No matter what happens, the option seller gets the buyer's premium, the price of the option. If and when I ever begin trading options, it will be as an option writer. But that does not mean you can not still lose big, folks. Yes?
Oh, I just wonder, like from your observation, have you seen where people win? Or, have you seen where people lose and win?
Okay. This is the problem when you're talking with gamblers. They will tell you about the times that they won, but they will very rarely tell you about the times that they lost. The one gentleman that I know, I interviewed him on the website, if you want to listen to I interviewed him for the online students. But he happened to be walking in while I was doing the a friend of mine, while I was doing the options lecture for my online students. And he goes, "Why are you bad-mouthing options?" I go, "Because you've lost so much money." He goes, "Well, yeah, but I made something." My experience with people. Now, that's not always true, though. I don't know. I don't know what to believe. That's the problem. Do you believe gamblers?
No.
Neither do I. he's not here right now, but Hugo talks about the times when he wins, and he goes, "I lost it all." He's honest. He goes, "Yeah, but then I lost everything. You know, I won $300, and then it was gone in 3 minutes. But actually, I won one time. I walked out of there with extra $700 in my pocket, but that was the only time." So he's honest. He'll tell you that he's lost a lot of money. But it's the same thing with options. I doubt. The guy who teaches the online class, the other section of 123, he just retired. He's been a broker for 30 years. He likes options. And he says that he actually makes money. So, I don't know. I don't know. I don't want anything to do with them. And I hope you don't either. But that is up to you. Selling options, covered options. Remember we did the covered call? If you're the option, the call option seller, you're hoping that the price goes down. That's why I used red, right? I used red. You're bearish. But what if the price goes up? I have 100 shares. You want them? There they are. The same thing is true on the other side. If I'm the put option seller, I'm hoping that the price goes up, because then, you know, that person's not going to sell it to me at that price. But if they do sell it to me, I got enough money to pay for the stock, I'm covered. So it's up to you. If you were thinking about buying the shares anyway, great. You get an extra, in this case, $5. And if it goes from 35 down to 32, you are going, I'm sorry, not 32, 30. If it goes down to 35 down to 30, you are going to buy it at 35 anyway. So you get $5 and you buy it for $30. You basically did what you were going to do anyway. But if it goes down to $5, you've lost a lot of money. Or if you're on the other side and it goes up to 80 and you have to sell it at 35. So you can still lose a lot of money, folks. The amount of return to the option writer is always limited to the amount of option premium at receipt. But the loss can be substantial if the stock explodes on the upside or collapses on the downside. We already discussed this. You own a stock, you're considering selling the stock, you write a cover call, receive the premium. If the stock price jumps substantially, the stock will be called away from you. You'll be forced to sell. If the stock price stays the same or goes down, the option will expire worthless. And then you can write another cover call because you still have the shares. In either case, you get to keep the premium. This strategy is only one of the two strategies I would ever do if I ever do options, which I'm probably never going to do. And so here's an example. Am I going too fast? Okay. You own Butterfly.com. It's currently selling for $50, but you bought it at $40, and you want to sell. Well, I'm not quite sure. Maybe there's something left out of this stock. So you write a covered call at $55, and you receive $500 in your pocket. That money is yours. They can't take it away from you for the premium because a $55 call is currently selling for $5. If the stock price jumps over $55, well, then it's going to be called away from you at $55. But you got an extra $5, so you sold it basically for $60. If the stock price stays below $55, well, you can turn around and do it again. Write another covered call. What's the downside? What if the stock price goes to 100? Oh, well, I have to sell it for $55. What if the stock price goes to 5? I should have sold. But you can still sell because nobody's going to exercise that option. And then the naked put is, we'll agree with you. The naked put, you're considering purchase of stock and you have the cash to make the transaction. That means you're not naked, but technically that you're naked. The way you are covered by the brokerage firms is you have a put option on the same stock. So you sell a put option, but you've bought another put option. So if somebody puts it to you, you put it to them. I don't like that, but that's how they don't consider this covered. Even though you have the money, you're covered. They don't consider that covered. They consider it covered if you've bought another put option, because then it gives them more commissions. So if the stock price falls substantially, the stock will be put to you, but you're going to buy it anyway. If the stock price stays the same or goes up, the option will expire worthless. You get to write another naked put. In either case, you get to keep the premium. This is the other option that I would personally consider, but I ain't never going to do it. I'm already too old. And here's another example. You're considering purchasing Butterfly.com. For $50, you have the $500, the $5,000 to buy 100 shares. You write a naked put at $45, receive $300 since the cost of the option is currently $3. If the stock price falls below $45, the stock will be put to you at $45. But it's as if you bought it at $42 because you got $3 from the put option buyer. You're the seller. If the stock price stays the same or goes up, you get to do it again. It allows you to make extra money from a stock that you want to purchase. The disadvantages? What if the stock zooms up? Oh, well, you didn't get to buy it. Or if the stock collapses to $5, then you're skunked. You got to buy it at $45. Now, okay, we're almost done. Now, you guys are kind of tired. Anybody got a good joke? No? Got a good joke? Okay. All right, employee stock options. Maybe the joke at the beginning of the presentation will make sense now, okay? The joke of the presentation. Employee stock options. That's an option granted to an employee by a company, giving the employee the right to buy shares of stock in the company at a fixed price for a fixed time. Usually have some significant differences from normal call options. They cannot be sold. They expire in many years, 10 years, whatever. And there's usually a vesting period. You have to sit at the company for 3, 5, 7 years until you get to use them. So you're working at one of these internet startup companies, and they don't have a whole lot of money because they're burning through cash like crazy. So they pay you a salary, but at the same time, they give you these stock options. Do you understand what an option is, right? You understand what an option is now, don't you? Hopefully. You get to buy the shares, and the when it works, folks, you can become very, very wealthy. Because your option might say you get to buy the shares. We don't have it. It's on the next slide. But you might get to buy the shares for $10, and the shares might be selling for $70 by the time everything works out. If it does. If instead of working for Google, you were working for Lycos or Alta Vista, have you heard of them? Or Dogpile. Now, why would anybody name their search engine Dogpile? I don't know, but that was it's probably still around. So these things can be very cool, or they can be an absolute nightmare. In the late 1990s, employee stock options were used extensively to attract employees to startup companies. So, during the 2000 to 2002 bear market, they were the subject of much controversy. There's still some fallout. In fact, Steve Jobs, Steve Jobs, was tainted with this scandal. Currently, companies can give employee stock options to their employees, and they don't have to pay anything. Because all they're doing is saying, in the future, someday, you can buy our shares for $10. But right now, you're not going to be able to use them. You have to wait 7 years, and the stock is selling for $3. So would you exercise an option at $10? And you can't do it for 5 years or 7 years. Many companies have agreed to expense stock options, but how do you come up with a price for something that is currently worthless? It's not worth anything. You can't exercise it. It's out of the money. You can't exercise it for 5 years. To make matters worse, while some people became fabulously wealthy through these things during the internet mania, ever hear John Moores, or Moore, whatever his name is, the Padre fame? He sold the Padres when he got divorced. He became filthy wealthy with a company called Peregrine. And I'll never forget this woman who worked there. She goes, I can't be worth this much money. I'm a grunt in a cube farm. She was just working for the company, and she had all these stock options, but she couldn't exercise them yet. They were worth thousands of dollars if she could exercise them, but she couldn't. I don't know if she ever did. Many other people were soaked with crippling tax burdens on worthless pieces of paper when their companies collapsed. And you're going, what are you talking about? Well, it has to do with the alternative minimum tax. Have you heard of the dreaded alternative minimum tax? If you took Business 121, we discussed it a little bit. It's there to make sure people who make a lot of money pay some taxes. Okay, that's what it's there for. So the AMT doesn't care if you didn't exercise the options. You're still taxed on them, whether or not you exercised them. So what happened is people who worked for some of these companies like WorldCom and Global Crossing and Enron and AOL Time Warner. Well, now it's Time Warner. AOL is on its own. But these companies, the stock price zoomed. The options were worth tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then the stock price collapsed. And the person didn't exercise the option. AMT doesn't care. you owe us $60,000 taxes on worthless paper. It's insane, wasn't it? Insane. People were just totally blown away. And the IRS said, well, that's the law. Sorry, you know, we're supposed to follow the law. And they made deals with people, you know, well, okay, pay us $20,000 and we'll be happy. It's not organized. Okay? It's different from the mafia. The mafia is organized, right? Organized crime. These guys are disorganized crime. Okay, so, bizarre. Wait a minute. Did you just ask, how do you come up with a price for something that is currently worthless? This is correct. Since many employee stock options are out of the money, often by a large amount, or cannot be exercised for a long time, or both, how do you put a price on an option that's not worth anything? The financial world currently uses a system called the Black-Scholes option pricing model. It may sound impressive, but in my humble opinion, it's actually very silly. It's what is in chapter 16. This is all in chapter 15, by the way. But we're going to ignore it, if you don't mind. But if we have time, we'll see a film that shows, that discusses the Black-Scholes model and how things can go very, very wrong. Almost done. The Black-Scholes option price. We've got just a few more slides. Hang on a minute. I wanted to get through this today, and I damn, but you're all looking at me like, I don't care if I know. I'm not going to learn this. No way. The stock is currently selling for $7.50 per share, right? You're working for the company, and you've got all these options. You've got 1,000 options. The employee stock option has an exercise price of $10. It's out of the money. Would you exercise your option? No, because you buy the stock at $7.50. And you can't exercise it for 3 years. You have to stay with the company for another 3 years before they become vested, before you can actually exercise the options. The Black-Scholes model might say that the employee stock option is worth $2.50. Huh? You can't sell it. You can't exercise it for 3 years. It's out of the money. How is it worth $2.50? The stock price might never go over $10. This company could go bankrupt. And if you're unfortunate enough to be affected by the AMT, you might have to pay taxes on it. This is the world we live in, folks. Now, stock index options. Just a couple more slides, right? Just a couple more slides. One more slide. There we go. There we go. A couple more slides. I know you're tired. Are you tired? Everybody yawn. 5 more minutes. Yeah. Did I tell you about the 3 junkies sharing needles? I didn't. Oh, this is serious. There were these 3 junkies sharing needles, and their buddy comes, I told you guys, don't do that. You could AIDS that way. And they said, no, it's cool. Everything's cool. We're all wearing condoms. See, they're wearing condoms. What are stock index options? Remember the S&P 500, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the NASDAQ, the Russell? You learn those, you rememberize them, because someone's going to ask you, what is this thing, this Dow Jones All Country World Index, MSCI All Country World Index, XUSA. A put or a call option that is written on a specific stock market index. So we've been talking about options on a single stock, but you can put it, you can buy a call option or a put option on the whole market. You can say, I think the Standard & Poor's 500 is going to collapse or it's going to go up. So if you have a portfolio of stocks, you can hedge that portfolio by buying a put on the S&P 500. In other words, if the S&P 500 falls, your stocks are going to go with it, right? If you bought a put on the index, the put's going to go up if the index goes down. But it's like insurance. It only happens for a certain amount of time, and then you have to buy it again. I'm not suggesting you do it, but you should know that they exist. And there are dozens and dozens of these things. It is still risky. It is still expensive, whether you're speculating or hedging, buying insurance. And there are interest rate options, currency options, long-term equity anticipation securities called LEAPS. I don't know how they get away with these things, but you'll see options that go out 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. I don't know how they get away with them because once you pass 1 year, you have to register the security with an Securities Exchange Commission, and that's why options are normally 3, 6, 9 months, treasury bills 3, 6, 9 months, corporate paper 3, 6, 9 months. So I don't know what they did, and I don't care. But just know that you can get a long-term option. Last slide. Warrants. Warrants are kind of like a call option, but not quite. They are a long-lived option, 10, 20 years sometimes, that gives the holder the right to buy. There are no put options, put warrants, they're all called, in a company at a price specified on the warrant. The warrant is usually used as a sweetener. It's given to stockholders or employees as a way to sweeten the deal. Unlike options where each contract represents 100 shares, one warrant represents one share of stock, and warrants are always call options. These things were very popular back in the 1960s. They got a bad name because a lot of them were worthless eventually. So what's the final comments on options? Don't stay away from them. The possibilities are endless, and so are the commissions. But if you go on my website, you'll see Optionetics. And they want to sell you a 2-day seminar for only $4,495 where you will learn in 2 days how to trade options and make money beyond your wildest dreams. Guaranteed. But, yeah, I went. I made a lot of money. I made $3. No. No, what I do is, they don't do it as much, but I ride my bikes on Sundays. Well, last Sunday was the first time I rode in 7 weeks with my foot. But often on Sundays they'll be in Mission Valley, and they'll do one up in North County, and they don't come in the South Bay usually. They want people with money. And they'll do their 2-hour free seminar. Well, it's 2 hours of just berating you to take the 2-day seminar. So I'll ride my bike, usually anywhere 40 to 50 miles or something like that. So I'll make it so that I get there by the hotel about half an hour before the thing starts, and I'll hold up a sign that says, "Options are gambling." Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. And people come up, "What are you doing?" I'm just letting people know that options are gambling. "Did you go with it? Are you nuts? I wouldn't go with these people. You're nuts. They're criminals. What are you talking about?" So they're going to try to sell you a 2-day seminar for $3,000 or $4,000. If you sign up today, you know, it's only $2,995. And he goes, "Yeah? Oh, okay." And afterwards, you know, I don't know what happens if I leave, but I'm sure they come out and go, "Hiccup was right. Hiccup was right." Okay, fine. You know, what can I say? I like spreading strife is my greatest joy. Okay, next Tuesday we will do futures and then start, and they're even more dangerous than options. But they actually have a useful usage, and we will start on margining and shorting and those kinds of things. Yes, and we'll be pretty close to being done, folks. Yeah.